A Guide to New Covenant Giving, Chapter 6. What about tithing? Let's not beat around the bush. Nowhere in the New Covenant do you find the command to give 10% of your earnings to the church. Nowhere in Paul's theology of giving will you find him teaching his converts to tithe. Tithing is not a New Covenant principle. It's just that simple. Tithing contradicts Paul's instruction that every person should give according as he purposes in his heart. That simple fact should be sufficient to settle the issue, but to put a fine point on it, many modern pastor teachers who advocate tithing fail to grasp the logical consequences of their teaching. For instance, most tithing advocates include Malachi's warning to inspire their congregants. Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Malachi 3:8-9. I do not remember ever hearing a tithing message that did not include that passage. It is constantly plucked from its context and utilized to create fear in those who hold back their 10%. Give it, or God will get you. But conversely, the Apostle Paul never taught Gentile churches to tithe. Not once, not anywhere. Now, if it is true that believers are required to pay that 10% or suffer the consequences of God's curse, Paul not only failed to teach giving correctly, he brought a curse on the whole New Testament church. That's the logical consequence of modern tithing teaching. Spooky, eh? Now, I must tell you that I have presented that argument to a few tithing advocates. Their responses ranged from indifferent to incredulous. The most common retort was that Paul did not have to teach tithing because it was already established in the early church. The logic went like this. The gospel was first preached in Jerusalem to Jewish converts who had already been paying tithes, and that practice naturally spread throughout the world as part of the Christian life. So Paul never taught it because it was unnecessary to instruct people to do what they were already doing. His instruction that every person give according to their hearts had to do strictly with offerings, which are above and beyond the tithes to which they were already accustomed. The only flaw with that theory is its utter lack of either historic or scriptural proof, and it stretches credulity. It is hard to believe that, of all the traditions of Judaism, the one that caught on universally was tithing. But more to the point, how did the necessity and doctrine of tithing spread to the far coasts of Gentile Christianity if the apostles did not carry it with them and teach it? And if they taught it, where is the evidence? No, the biblical facts deny that theory. As far as we know, neither Paul, Timothy, Titus, Peter, John Mark, Barnabas, Luke, nor any other early propagator of the gospel taught the Gentiles to pay tithes. And there is a reason, a very good reason. The church is under the new covenant, and tithing was part of the old. So why is such obvious evidence ignored in favor of faulty teaching? What we must realize is that the church is not what it once was. Our English word church comes from the Celtic kirke. Versions of that word appear in all Latin-based languages. The word kirke is derived from the Greek word kyriake, which means lords, or from kyriakos, which means belonging to the Lord. So the church belongs to the kurios, the Lord. Meanwhile, the Greek word translated church or assembly is ekklesia, which means out-called ones. So, by definition, the church is not a building or a structure. It is a people, the ones called out of the world to God. But these days, the word church refers to a self-perpetuating corporate organization with large edifices, enormous overhead, and huge budgets that need to be retained. And the best bet to cover their astronomical expenses is mandatory giving. Most large church structures are built and funded by tithes and the threat of God's curse. I spent several years in a church in Los Angeles that taught tithing as adamantly and constantly as any I have encountered. I know the arguments in favor of tithing, and I know the legalism that must engulf a church in order for systematic tithing to take hold and continue unabated. But I also know the freedom that comes from recognizing God's plan of giving from a true motive for His glory. So, with that bit of introduction, let's begin with some history, and then we will refute the arguments. It's enlightening to read what the Bible actually says on the subject. I guarantee, and that's an absolute rock-solid guarantee, that you have never heard the whole story about tithing from any church that insists on receiving your 10%. But you need to know. Israel and the tithe. As God prepared to deliver Israel out of their bondage in Egypt, He chose a man from the house of Levi, one of the 12 tribes of Israel, to be His deliverer. The man was Moses. Along with his brother Aaron, Moses was given the command to go before the Egyptian Pharaoh and demand the release of Israel in order that they could serve God exclusively. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, Thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, Let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. Exodus 4:22-23. And Moses said, Thus saith the Lord, About midnight will I go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that sits behind the mill, and all the firstborn of beasts. Exodus 11:4-5. On the night of the Passover, death passed through Egypt. The next morning, Israel began their journey to the Promised Land. However, no sooner had they begun their journey, even before their fateful encounter with the Red Sea, than God announced that all the firstborn of Israel were to be consecrated to Him. He had spared them, and they now belonged to Him. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whatsoever openeth the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, it is mine. Exodus 13:1-2. But God did not expect every firstborn male in Israel to go into service for Him. He allowed, indeed He commanded, that the firstborn human male should be redeemed and returned to his family. And it shall be, when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of the Canaanites, as He sware unto thee and to thy fathers, and shall give it thee, that thou shalt set apart unto the Lord all that openeth the matrix, and every firstling that cometh of a beast thou hast. The males shall be the Lord's, and every firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb. And if thou wilt not redeem it, then thou shalt break his neck. And all the firstborn of man among thy children shalt thou redeem. Exodus 13:11-13. In exchange for the firstborn of all Israel, God took to Himself one tribe of the Israelites, the Levites, and assigned them to work in the tabernacle and serve Him continually. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take the Levites from among the children of Israel, and cleanse them. And thou shalt bring the Levites before the Lord, and the children of Israel shall put their hands upon the Levites, and Aaron shall offer the Levites before the Lord for an offering of the children of Israel, that they may execute the service of the Lord. And thou shalt separate the Levites from among the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. And after that shall the Levites go in and do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And thou shalt cleanse them and offer them for an offering. For they are wholly given unto me from among the children of Israel, instead of such as open every womb, even instead of the firstborn of all the children of Israel, have I taken them unto me. Numbers 8, 5 and 6, 10 and 11, 13 through 16. As a result of God's commission into service, the house of Levi received no parcel of land in Canaan. But God would not leave them without provision. As we read earlier, those who served in the tabernacle were to live by the tabernacle. So God required a steady flow of offerings and sacrifices brought by the children of Israel and administered by the priests and Levites. Those offerings became sustenance for Aaron's family, the lineage of the priests, and those who served in the tabernacle, the Levites. And the Lord spake unto Aaron, Behold, I also have given thee the charge of mine heave offerings of all the hallowed things of the children of Israel. Unto thee have I given them by reason of the anointing, and to thy sons by an ordinance forever. This shall be thine of the most holy things, reserved from the fire, every oblation of theirs, every meat offering of theirs, and every sin offering of theirs, and every trespass offering of theirs, which they shall render unto me, shall be most holy for thee and for thy sons. In the most holy place shalt thou eat it, every male shall eat it, it shall be holy unto thee. And this is thine, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings of the children of Israel. I have given them unto thee, and to thy sons, and to thy daughters with thee, by a statute forever. Every one that is clean in thy house shall eat it. All the best of the oil, and all the best of the wine, and of the wheat, the first fruits of them which they offer unto the Lord, them have I given thee. And whatsoever is first ripe in the land, which they shall bring unto the Lord, shall be thine. Every one that is clean in thy house shall eat it. Everything devoted in Israel shall be thine. Numbers 18, 8-14. Provided the children of Israel kept their duties before the Lord, Aaron and his posterity would be well cared for. They were allowed to eat from every meat offering, every sin and trespass offering, the heave offerings, which were usually grain offerings, and the wave offerings also belonged to Aaron's family. And look at the language. All the best of the oil, the wine, and the wheat, the first portion of every harvest, belonged to Aaron by a statute forever. Aaron's family would never want for anything. The other 11 tribes of Israel were required to sacrifice their best blessings, and Aaron partook of those offerings. Still, there was an entire tribe of Levites to care for. If Aaron received all the offerings, what did the Levites receive in exchange for their lack of land inheritance? And behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Numbers 18:21. The Levites received the tithes. One-tenth of everything Israel produced went to the Levites on a regular basis. That's pretty generous. 11 tribes producing food, grain, oil, wine, and material wealth all gave one-tenth of their production to the Levites. That was the deal. The tithe was a tax of sorts imposed on Israel by God for the care and sustenance of those who served in the tabernacle. They received no land, no lasting physical inheritance in Canaan, but they had God's law commanding all Israel to provide for their every need. But the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer as an heave offering unto the Lord, I have given to the Levites to inherit. Therefore I said unto them, Among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. Numbers 18:24. Now as long as the temple stood and the Levites served, it was Israel's responsibility to bring both the offerings and the tithes, providing for the priests and the Levites. That was the purpose of the tithe. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. Leviticus 27:30. God was jealous over his tithe. He was adamant that all Israel observe his statute and bring their tenths to the tabernacle. He made it very personal. After all, God expects proper worship and service. The tithes of Israel belong to him, and he chose to give them to the Levites. And if a man sought to buy back his grain, wine, or seed, he had to add 20% to the value. And if a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth part thereof. Leviticus 27:31. When a man was counting his herd, every tenth animal belonged to God. He was not allowed to consider whether it was a good animal or not in order to exchange it. If it was tenth in the counting, it was God's. And if he sought to exchange it, then both the original animal and the changed animal were God's. The tithe of everything in Israel was holy unto the Lord, and God was quite serious about it, according to Leviticus 27:32-33. Tithing was not voluntary in Israel. It was an absolute commandment, according to Leviticus 27:34. To be a member of the community of Israel, you had to pay to support the priests and Levites who served in the tabernacle, working to satisfy the commands, sacrifices, and service God demanded. The common people could not enter the tabernacle or approach the holiest place, so they were required to support the men that God chose for those purposes. And indeed, all the tithes of the land were holy unto the Lord. They were separated out for his purposes. Eat your tithes. Now, typically, armed with this information, the modern tithing advocate will launch into his sermon, The Tithe is Holy Unto the Lord. And then he will insist that the congregants drop their tenths into the offering plates. But they have truncated the story. They've left off the best part. There is much more to this tithing thing. It has always been my contention that if you teach tithing and use the Old Testament to support your insistence on it, then you need to address the entirety of Old Testament teaching on the subject. I mean, there is only one true teaching on the subject, so you need to learn all of it. But if the modern tithing advocates ever told their congregations the whole story, they would undermine their own financial security. So you can see the dilemma. Nonetheless, let's read and understand the whole system of biblical tithing, and let the chips fall where they will. But, as I said before, if you are a member of a church that tithes built, you have never heard the whole story. It is true that God required Israel to put aside one-tenth of their whole substance. It was set aside for God's purposes, and God could do with it as he pleased. So, he established a 3-year rule regarding the tenths and expected obedience to his system. It worked like this. Every third year, the tithes of Israel were gathered into storage bins, called storehouses, according to Deuteronomy 28:8. And the Levites, widows, fatherless, and destitute among them, would live off that gathering. The third year was even designated by God as the year of tithing. When thou hast made an end of tithing all the tithes of thine increase the third year, which is the year of tithing, and hast given it unto the Levites, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that they may eat within thy gates and be filled, then thou shalt say before the Lord thy God, I have brought away the hallowed things out of mine house, and also have given them unto the Levite, and unto the stranger, to the fatherless, and to the widow, according to all thy commandments which thou hast commanded me. I have not transgressed thy commandments, neither have I forgotten them. I have not eaten thereof in my mourning, neither have I taken away aught thereof for any unclean use, nor given aught thereof for the dead. But I have hearkened to the voice of the Lord my God, and have done according to all that thou hast commanded me. Deuteronomy 26:12-14. But, you ask, I thought all the tenths of all Israel belonged to God, right? So what happened to the tithes on the first and second year? Well, this is where it gets interesting. Israelites were indeed commanded to set aside a tenth of everything, every year, to use according to God's designation. It is holy, set aside for the Lord. And what did God require them to do with those tithes? Eat them at a feast. You see, three times a year, every man who was capable of traveling was required to come up to Jerusalem for God's feast days, the set times of the Lord. Exodus 23:14 says, Three times thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. Deuteronomy 16:16-17 says, Three times a year shall all the males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, and in the feast of weeks, and in the feast of tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he has given thee. So, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which included Passover and the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Weeks, which we know as Pentecost, and during the Feast of Tabernacles, which included the Feast of Trumpets and the Feast of Atonement, all Israel would gather at Jerusalem. But they were not to show up empty-handed. They were to bring offerings. Oh, and since it was a feast, they were to bring plenty of food for themselves, their families, and the Levites among them. And what food would that be? Thou mayest not eat within thy gates the tithe of thy corn, or of thy wine, or of thy oil, or the firstlings of thy herds, or of thy flock, nor any of thy vows which thou vowest, nor thy freewill offerings or heave offerings of thine hand. But thou must eat them before the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord thy God shall choose, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite that is within thy gates. And thou shalt rejoice before the Lord thy God in all that thou puttest thine hands unto. Take heed to thyself that thou forsake not the Levite as long as thou livest upon the earth. Deuteronomy 12:17-19. Deuteronomy 14:22-23 says, Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to put his name there, thy tithe, of thy corn, of thy wine, and of thine oil, and the firstlings of thy herds and thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. Israel learned to fear and trust God, and one way of demonstrating that was to appear before him three times a year. But when they arrived, the individual Israelites ate their own tithes, corn, wine, oil, animals, all of it. They were required to appear at God's feasts, and he made sure that they had plenty to eat when they got there. They set aside their tithes between the three feast gatherings and brought that abundance with them to Jerusalem. Now, if a man were particularly well off, and his tenths added up to more than he could physically carry to Jerusalem, God allowed that he could sell his tithes, take the money to the feast, and buy whatever he desired with his tithe money. And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God has blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or for whatever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household, and the Levite that is within thy gate. Thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. Deuteronomy 14:24-27. Let's be clear. If we are going to teach tithing, 10% of everything you reap, in keeping with the Old Testament standard, then we must, of necessity, also teach that every individual Christian must eat his own tithes, sharing them with his family and any Levites we find hanging around. And, of course, we must make the trip to Jerusalem in order to eat them. You certainly are forbidden to eat them within thy gates. Plus, we are allowed to sell our tithes for money, take the money to the feast, and use our tithes to buy meat, wine, strong drink, or whatever our soul desires. And every third year, we will set our tithes aside for the benefit of the poor, fatherless, widows, and Levites. Deuteronomy 14:28-29 says, "At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shalt lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest." Now, I hope you're getting my point. There is only one system of tithing in the Bible. There are not two systems, one for Israel and one for the church. The whole of Scripture only prescribes one method and one purpose for the tithes. They are eaten at God's feasts, and they are laid up in the storehouses, so that the poor and downtrodden of Israel, as well as the Levites, are cared for. And that's it. So whenever a preacher insists on taking your tithes and using them for the work of the church, paying bills, or erecting structures, he is taking what is not rightfully his. It belongs to God for God's purposes. And God told the Israelites to eat their tithes. See, you have never heard that in church, have you? I grew up in church and have never once heard a preacher proclaim that. But that's the Bible. And we either have to adjust our theology to accommodate what Scripture actually says on the subject, or we must admit that we prefer to act contrary to His will. The New Covenant also poses some interesting realities. For instance, seeing as how there are no Levites in the church, is it necessary to provide for them? Well, it's axiomatic. The answer is no. Should we act charitably toward the poor and the oppressed? Yes, absolutely. But should we lay up our tents in storehouses every third year? It's not a bad-sounding idea, but it's certainly not a new covenant requirement. We are not to be weary in well-doing, according to Galatians 6:9. We are to love our enemies, and as much as is in us, we are to live at peace with all men. It is an everyday lifestyle, not an every third year requirement. And finally, inasmuch as the whole teaching on tithing is part of the Mosaic covenant, should the new covenant church be subject to that standard? No, obviously not. We are subject to the newer, higher lawgiver and his far better covenant. In the next chapter, we will consider the most popular arguments used to advocate tithing in the church, and we will see if they can pass scriptural muster. I think you already know the answer, but it's a very freeing experience when we let the Word toss off the shackles that we have carried for too long.